Buen sábado and good afternoon, everyone. It's good to see you all. We've been gone quite a bit recently, and it's nice to be back. This is our first time here, and it brings back a lot of memories for my wife and I. We didn't think we'd be coming back here. My two younger sons attended and graduated from Glendale Adventist. We were looking at their pictures, and it just brought back a lot of memories. And I want to thank the special music. I think we're incredibly privileged to have people with such talent in our congregation. I also want to welcome back Carolyn Roybal. We talked about her trip to Guatemala. She came back yesterday. If you'd like to hear about it, it's really exciting. International travel, there's nothing like it for an education and for an experience, and she has learned much and has a lot to share. So if you'd like to talk to her about it, that'd be great as well. John Anderson, this is like Imperial all over again, isn't this? You know, like, John, were you in my accounting class? Oh, you were. What did you get? No, we don't. We won't go that far. But it's been a while. It's good to see so many guests here and family members of the Garms family. It's really a privilege to have you here today. So today I would like to discuss an attitude that has a significant impact on one's perspective in life. And the attitude I'm about to discuss can be subtle. We may not even realize we've embraced it. We may not even realize it is deeply ingrained in our personality, in our everyday communications, in our thought process, and it can be destructive, especially in our relationships with others, with our spouses, with our children, with our coworkers, with our friends, and ultimately in our relationship with God. To analyze this attitude, this outlook, let's go to Luke 17, verse 12. Luke 17, verse 12. Luke 17, verse 12. Look at this. It states in verse 12, as he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers who stood at a distance and lifted their voices, saying, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. Now, leprosy is an infectious disease that's been known since biblical times. In today's language, it is known as Hansen's disease, which is a bacterial infection, which is very treatable. In fact, there's a Hansen's disease clinic at County USC. So the disease exists even today. And left untreated, leprosy can be progressive in causing permanent damage to the skin, nerves, limbs, and eyes. And contrary to folklore and movies, leprosy does not cause body parts to fall off, although body parts can become numb as a result of the infection, and the infection results in tissue loss. So fingers and toes become shortened as a result of the disease and deformed as cartilage is absorbed into the body. Now, you may be wondering what leprosy has to do with an outlook, with an attitude, so please bear with me. We'll get there. Now, throughout its history, leprosy has been totally misunderstood. For a long time, leprosy was thought to be a hereditary disease or a curse or a punishment from God. Before and even after the discovery of its biological cause, leprosy patients were shunned and stigmatized. For example, in the Middle Ages in Europe, leprosy sufferers had to wear special clothing and had to carry a bell and to ring it and to warn others that were close. And they sometimes even had to move to another side of the road if the wind was going in a certain direction. In ancient times, the only way to isolate leprosy was to isolate the lepers so the disease could be contained. Leviticus 13, verse 46, you don't need to turn there, it states, all the days wherein the plague shall be within him, he shall be defiled, he is unclean, he shall dwell alone, without the camp shall his habitation be. So the leper had to separate him or herself from those who did not have the disease. In other words, separating themselves totally from the people in the sanctuary. Effectively, the leper was cast into exile. As an outcast, the leper would tear his clothes to show extreme agony and grief. His head was bare to express deep humiliation. He put a covering above his upper lip and cried out loud, "Unclean, unclean," so those who did not have the disease would risk contagion. Can we imagine the leper's fate? Looked upon with horror by friends, family, people in the community, and ultimately to be cast out at your direst need, when your fear is greatest, you're sick, you don't know what's wrong, you're cast out of the camp. People fled when they heard the cry, "Unclean, unclean." And those who had leprosy in those days led a horrible existence amongst themselves, with nothing to look forward to but increasing suffering and ultimately death. How would we feel? How would we feel if we lived during those times and a cure was provided? Let's go back to Luke 12, now on to verse 13. When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were cleansed. And one of them, when he saw what he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. And he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. Now he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus answered, "Were not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" And he said unto him, "Rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well." Only one of the 10 came back to express appreciation for the miracle, the absolute miracle that just happened. Now, I would imagine the other 9 were pretty ecstatic. They probably went to see family and to show them the good news. They were no longer isolated. They wanted to share their incredible miracle with others, to share their incredible blessing. But they failed to express appreciation for what happened to them. How can a person who was suffering so much, who was isolated and rejected by society, and receive such a blessing, not go back to Christ and thank him? Now, it would be easy to judge the ingratitude of those 9 individuals who failed to express appreciation for what they've been given. It seems so apparent how wrong they were, but apart from saying the words, "Thank you," how thankful are we? Do we actively show appreciation to our others, to our parents, to our spouse, to our children? Do we go out of our way to show appreciation? Would people that we interact with on a daily basis see us as a thankful person, a person that appreciates what others does for them? Or would they see us as a person who fails to see the contributions of others, or maybe even of God in our lives? Today I would like to focus on the impact of ingratitude in our lives. If you want a title for this message, like Mr. Frown always wants for me, it would be titled, "The Burden of Ingratitude." For indeed, carrying ingratitude in our lives is a burden, not only to those around us, to our spouse, to our children, to our parents, to our friends, to our neighbors, to our co-workers, but to ourselves. Webster's dictionary defines ingratitude as forgetfulness of or poor return for kindness received. It can also be defined as not appreciating or valuing what one has or has been given. It should be noted that unexpressed gratitude is also ingratitude. In today's fast-paced world, most people do not have the time or seem to have the time for appreciation or thankfulness. Work, family matters, soccer practice, doctor's appointments, countless other things become a main priority, especially when one has a family to take care of. And it can safely be said that in our society today, people really don't have the time to thank others. In its simplest state, ingratitude is, in effect, a form of robbery. It robs those to whom gratitude is due. It is the withholding of what is justly theirs. Ingratitude can also be hurtful. It can hurt the person who endures it. Ingratitude can hurt the person whom appreciation is not shown. The person may become discouraged, disappointed, that their actions weren't properly acknowledged. How many times have we experienced that? How many times have we experienced the disappointment of ingratitude? How does it feel? There's a story of Ed Spencer, who jumped in the cold waters of Lake Michigan to save 17 people when the Lady Elgin sank. The Lady Elgin was a steamship that sank in 1860. When he brought the 17 people to safety, he collapsed on the shore. Throughout the night, as he laid in the infirmary, he kept saying, "Have I done my best, my fellows? Have I done my best?" Mr. Spencer gradually recovered from the exposure and the exertion of that night, but it broke its health, from which he never completely recovered. He moved to California, where he spent the rest of his life in seclusion. When he died at age 81, a newspaper told the story and stated that not one of the 17 people he saved ever thanked him for what he had done. Not one. Ingratitude can also harm the one who's not expressing gratitude. For if the person who fails to express gratitude fails to see how much God and others impact their lives in a positive way, for if they did, they would be sure to express appreciation to others for what they've done. In many ways, ingratitude's a double-edged sword. It is a burden to our ability to see how God and how others positively impact our lives, and it's a burden to those who feel the pain of being unappreciated. We may think of Hebrews 6, verse 10, you don't need to turn there. We said, well, you know, it's okay to be unappreciated. That's just life, and we're Christians. And we probably read and say, God is not unjust in Hebrews 6, verse 10. He will not forget your work and love you have shown him as you have helped his people and continue to help them. So thus we know we shouldn't be really impacted by the pain of being unappreciated. We feel we probably can deal with it, but at times we do feel the pain. And if we are honest with ourselves, it hurts. Parents can be hurt when children for whom they cared for and sacrificed prove ungrateful. Children can be hurt when their parents do not properly acknowledge their efforts and only focus on their shortcomings, as if they're to be perfect in this life. We do not know how much we hurt our friends, our family, our spouse, when we treat them without proper appreciation, forgetting all the things they do for us, sometimes behind the scenes. Unfortunately, at times we may repay their favors, their kindness, their sacrifice with indifference. And whatever we may say about one's ingratitude to others, there's no question about the lack of gratitude to God. We receive blessings from Him. Indeed, our calling, the understanding of the meaning of life, isn't that a great blessing? And yet, are there days that we don't express appreciation to God, even for the little things in our life? Our prayers may acknowledge the majesty and power of God, and then largely requests for things and help and favor, but with very little appreciation of what we have been blessed with. How many of us remember to give thanks for answered prayer? How many times do we give thanks for unanswered prayer or for the blessings we have? How many of us are really more like the 9 lepers than the one? 2 Timothy 3, verse 1, please. 2 Timothy 3, verse 1. It states in 2 Timothy 3, verse 1, "But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its powers. And from such people turn away." The time of the end will be a time where society and people within it are generally unappreciative, unthankful. This lack of appreciation extends to not only not appreciating what we have, but not appreciating what others do for us, not appreciating the relationship we've been privileged to have with God. Romans 1, verse 21. Romans 1, verse 21. Romans 1, verse 21. It states, "Because of that, when they knew God, they glorified Him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened." The New Jewish Testament commentary provides the following analysis of verse 21. Whether you acknowledge God's existence is not the question. Even the demons believe in God, and their belief makes them tremble. The issue, rather, is that you do not glorify Him or thank Him. You do not relate to Him personally as He is. It is this initial failing that produces the long downhill slide. Once God is no longer in your thinking, everything becomes futile or vain. Your heart becomes spiritually undiscerning and lacking, and lacking God's light, and it can only then be darkened. What does the rest of Romans chapter say about those who are unthankful? Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made into an incorruptible man, and to birds, and to four-footed beasts, and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. Romans 1, 22-24. One of the hallmarks and one of the traits of those who would reject God in their knowledge is that they become unthankful. The danger of ingratitude, of being unthankful, can have a dramatic impact in our lives. It can impact our view of what we have, our view of others, our view of God. And during the recent downturn in the economy, the instability, this country has so much wealth, but yet we take for granted the simple blessings. When we consider that the poverty levels today far exceed the standard of living that most people enjoyed even a century ago. We live in a society that's fascinated with technology and gadgets, in a society of incredible abundance. I can safely say, and I think we would all agree with this, that we have gained more possessions to ourselves in this day and age than people have been able to do in any other time in this world, in any time in history. We have reached a point in history where things such as food, clothing, and shelter are no longer seen as blessings, but are right. While a great portion of the world looks at Western world and sees great wealth, we tend to view it as something we are entitled to. The problem is we may find ourselves encountering a situation where we need to take a step back, tighten up. Maybe it's a loss of employment or some other matter, and we need to tighten up and reduce our standard of living. And yet we look at others and they're still attaining things that we would also like to have, and we may become upset because we feel we are being denied what is rightly ours. Turn to Luke 12, verse 15. Luke 12, verse 15. Luke 12, verse 15, and he said to him, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." The New Living Translation provides the following rendition of this scripture. Then he said, "Beware, guard against every kind of greed. Life is not measured by how much you own." From television commercials to programs to movies to shopping malls to homes, there is a widespread attitude of entitlement and selfishness sweeping the nations of this world. Adults and children appear to be becoming more ungrateful, more unthankful, even though they have more each and every day. And the main accelerator to this is commercialism. Society has been caught up in the "work so hard you deserve a new car and a vacation in the Bahamas" mentality. This in turn has caused many to believe in the ideology that if they don't acquire these luxuries, life is somehow treating them unfairly. Thus, people find themselves getting into financial difficulties and challenges trying to attain what they believe is the American dream. One United States president made the following statement: "We have been recipients of the choicest blessings of heaven. We have been preserved these many years in peace and prosperity. We have grown in numbers, wealth, and power as no nation ever has grown, but we have forgotten God. We have forgotten the gracious hand that preserved us in peace and multiplied and enriched and strengthened us. And we have vainly imagined in the deceitfulness of our hearts that these blessings were produced by some superior wisdom and virtue of our own." The president was not a modern-day president, but Abraham Lincoln. And this is a tremendously powerful statement. Since the time President Lincoln gave this speech, the wealth, the prosperity, and the peace experienced by the United States is far greater, but along also with the attitude of pride, selfishness, and ingratitude. Thus, we can find we can be ungrateful in a variety of ways. We can be unthankful for the blessings we've been giving, always just wanting more. It's never enough. We can be unthankful for the relationships we have around us. We can be unthankful with our relationship with God. And this ingratitude can be destructive on how we view what we have and in our relationship with others and in our relationship with God. So we need to guard our mind. We need to guard our thoughts. So what are ways we can identify an ungrateful frame of mind in our lives? This time I'd like to cover four symptoms of an unthankful or an ungrateful frame of mind. The first symptom, complaining. Complaining. People who are unthankful will tend to have negative personalities, and they find it easy to complain about little things or easily become moody. People who are not thankful or unthankful are not deeply rooted or grounded in a positive or thankful pattern of thinking. So when something comes up and pushes their buttons, they quickly forget about the many blessings they have and begin to complain and grumble, become dissatisfied with their situation. And this brings about a negative or pessimistic personality or mood. And this explains the Israelites, when they would just go on complaining, even after God delivered them from the hands of their enemies and fed them. In Numbers, we are told how the Israelites were grumbling over the manna God was giving them every morning when they woke up. So God heard their complaints and stated the following. Turn to Numbers 11, verse 18. Numbers 11, verse 18. And I would like to read from the New Living Translation. And he says, "And say to the people, purify yourselves, for tomorrow you will have meat to eat. You were whining, and the Lord heard you cried, 'Oh, for some meat, we were better off in Egypt.' Now the Lord will give you meat, and you will have to eat it. And it won't be for just a day, or two, or five, or 10, or even 20. You will eat it for a whole month until you gag and you are sick of it. For you have rejected the Lord who is here among you, and you have whined to him, saying, 'Why did we ever leave Egypt?'" A second symptom of an unthankful or an ungrateful frame of mind, unforgiving. Unforgiving. Unthankful people can be unforgiving towards themselves, towards God, and towards others. In Matthew 18, we see the picture of an unthankful servant who was forgiven of a great debt, but he could not forgive his fellow servant of such a smaller debt. Turn to Matthew 18, verse 32. "If a person is bitter or holds things against others, then it shows that they are ungrateful for what God has done for them." Matthew 18, verse 32. It states in Matthew 18, verse 32, "Then the king called in the man he had forgiven and said, 'You evil servant, I forgave you that tremendous debt because you pleaded with me. Shouldn't you have mercy on your fellow servant just as I had mercy on you?' Then the angry king sent the man to prison to be tortured until he had paid his entire debt." A third symptom of an unthankful frame of mind, dissatisfaction. Dissatisfaction. Unthankful people tend to be dissatisfied with what they have. It's never enough, and they only want more. And this is an obvious sign. Greed causes us to be unthankful for the things we have been blessed with. One can become frustrated when they're thinking about things that they don't have rather than what they do have. It's a mindset that gets people into financial trouble. They find themselves going into debt, to buying things they cannot afford. The desire to have outweighs the desire to be fiscally responsible. Or if they do have the money, they may spend it recklessly, only to find out they have spent what they had with little or nothing to show for it. Luke 15, verse 11. Luke 15, verse 11. Luke 15, verse 11, and again, I would like to read from the New Living Translation. It states, to illustrate the point further, Jesus told them a story. A man had two sons. The younger son told his father, I want my share of your estate now before you die. So father agreed to divide his wealth between his two sons. In verse 13, a few days later, the younger son packed all his belongings and moved to a distant land, and there he wasted all his money in wild living. There are times when, especially with regard to many young couples, as soon as they get married, they start trying to accumulate all that mom and dad had all at once, rather than realizing that it took time and effort and sacrifice to obtain the things that the parents had. And unfortunately, these individuals accumulate things and memories in a very short time, many times with debt. And they find quickly they're out of money, and all of a sudden life becomes difficult and relationships become strained. It was fun when there was money. It was fun when there were things, and it was fun to buy new cars and new furniture and go on vacations. But now the fun's over, and the stress of the financial mistakes far outweigh the joy of attaining those memories of those things. The fourth symptom of an unthankful frame of mind, pessimism. Pessimism. People who are unthankful will tend to be pessimistic. Optimism is defined as a disposition or tendency to look on the more favorable side of events or conditions and expect the most favorable outcome, or the belief that good ultimately predominates over evil in the world. Pessimism is defined as the tendency to see, anticipate, or emphasize only bad or undesirable outcome, results, conditions, problems, etc. And also, the belief that evil and pain in the world are not compensated by good and by happiness. The pessimist will justify their actions and their outlook by saying, I'm just a realist. I counter this that an optimist is a constructive realist who doesn't ignore problems but always sees the good and the potential and possibilities from challenges, from problems. A pessimist sees more limiting problems than opportunities. But sometimes the danger of an optimist is that they fail to see problems at all. The 10 spies were discouraged when Israel, the 10 spies that were discouraged from entering Canaan were pessimists. They saw obstacles, strong and giant Canaanites, and heavily fortified cities, instead of opportunities and the faith and to trust God's power to take the land. They said, we're not able. It's too strong for us. Their pessimistic outlook caused them to negatively exaggerate reality and see themselves as tiny, weak grasshoppers. And so much negativity, what happened from the tent? It spread out. And it would spread out throughout the camp. And it created a defeatist attitude among the people. And this is in Numbers 14, if you want to read it later. They wanted to play it safe and regress instead of making progress. And their ultimate punishment was not to be allowed to enter into the land of Israel. A heavy price for their pessimism. So we need to ask ourselves, do we have these symptoms? Do we complain? Are we unforgiving? Are we dissatisfied with what we have? Are we properly taking care of what we have in this life, even though maybe it's meager? Are we pessimistic? Being unthankful, or conversely, being thankful, is a choice. It's a thought process. And when we're unthankful, it says a lot about our character. Perhaps the biggest danger we face today as it regards the need to be thankful is that we have so much that we just take it for granted. Unlike the Depression era generation where my parents grew up, who saved and scrimped and valued everything they had, most of us who live today cannot really remember hard times where you didn't have enough food on the table, or you're always being in want and hungry. or being cold. How many of us would agree we live in a thankless society? The majority of our culture lives with an attitude of entitlement. We live in a society that people feel they are entitled to better pay, better benefits, and more stuff. If one cannot afford something, the government should pick up the tab. We basically have evolved into a society of a bunch of spoiled people, a society of entitlement. Too many never stop to give thanks for what they have, but loudly voice what their desire to have more. The bottom line is that people in society have enjoyed so many blessings that they've come to expect it. And unfortunately, when those expectations are not met, when the perceived entitlements do not come, the person expresses their frustration through anger and complaining. Hal Urban was an author and a teacher, a college teacher, wrote about an assignment he gave his students over 20 years. First, he raised a question in his class, and the question was, how many times a day do you complain? He wanted to get the students to identify with the old saying, we seldom think of what we have, but always of what we lack. So over 20 years, Mr. Urban conducted this experiment with his classes. He asked his students to go 24 hours without complaining. And the first response was typically, they complained. They didn't want to do that. But he told the students not to stop the experiment with the first complaint just because they blew it in the first hour. He said, that's okay, keep going. Just track how many times you complain or almost complain or catch yourself and make a note of it. He wanted them to go on for 24 hours, if possible, without complaining. Could we do it? Could we go 24 hours without complaining? That's an interesting question. So the students were tracking a piece of paper, and then he discussed with the students in the next class. He asked the students how many in the class did they think of 30 did not complain once in 24 hours. The typical answer the students saw, anywhere between 6 and 12 students never complained for 24 hours. But the real answer was, in over 20 years, the answer is zero. Everybody complained. All complained. The answer was consistent. There was never a person who didn't complain at least once during 24 hours. How about us? Could we go 24 hours without complaining? Without complaining about our boss, our co-workers, our spouse, our children, our parents, our government, the commuter that just cut us off with the car. I would like to challenge us to do that one day this coming week, to go one day without complaining. I will tell you, I've tried a number of times and I have failed miserably. But give it a try. Tally the times you do and then consider the impact that not only makes on your lives, but the lives of others. So how do we break this cycle of ingratitude, the influence of ingratitude in our lives? Whatever we think about through the day will affect our personality and our mood. So the first step in breaking the influence is to change our thinking. Change our thinking. Mahatma Gandhi once stated, a man is but the product of his thoughts. What he thinks is what he becomes. If we spend the day thinking about negative things around us and things we can complain about, which are probably many, we will most likely develop a pessimistic personality. It will pull us down, since pessimism and optimism are opposites. And whatever one we allow to feed our mind will eventually push the other farther and farther away. One of the vital steps to develop a thankful personality is to meditate. That means to think about often the things in our lives we are thankful for. It may be helpful to make a list of the things we're thankful for and keep it and look at it periodically throughout the day when times get challenging. For example, you might find yourself at a difficult situation at work, but yet, are we appreciative that we at least have a job and we have gainful employment when so many are out of work today? It may take a little more work at first, but eventually, if we program our minds, we can start thinking positively about matters. It is a tearing down of some strongholds in our mind, because we have been this society and we have been taught to think negatively. Philippians 4 verse 8. Says, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are honest, whatever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, what should we do? Think on these things. Now, I'm not saying we should be Pollyannish either. So, for many in this life are going through difficult circumstances, tough challenges. Of course, we need to be realistic, but we also need to focus on what we do have, what we've been blessed with, rather than what we don't have. One quote I would like to read regard to this perspective is as follows. Instead of complaining that the rose bush is full of thorns, be happy that the thorn bush has roses. So my challenge is for us to stop right now and ask ourselves, what have I been thinking about this past week, this past day, this past hour? If we truly want to change the way we perceive things, we have to change the way we think. If we want to develop a thankful mindset, then we need to meditate and think about the things we've been blessed with. And even when at times it seems that we have nothing to be thankful for, we can be thankful for the blessing of the calling God has given us, the understanding of the plan of mankind and its existence on this earth. In this daily hustle and grind, in our search for happiness in this life, which is sometimes too tied into what we wish or what we could have, in reality, we have so very much. And if you don't believe so, please talk to Caroline about her experience in Guatemala. It's not easy to have this mindset when the world is crashing in on us, but it's good to step back, to disengage from what's pressing us, and to reflect upon what's truly important. Even in our darkest moments, even in our toughest hours, we have the following encouragement. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 9. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 9. We have this encouragement even in our darkest times. 1 Corinthians 2 verse 9. But as it is written, eye has not seen nor ear heard, neither has entered into the hearts of man the things that God has prepared for them that love him. The second step to breaking the influence of ingratitude or unthankfulness in our lives is to take time and take the time to show appreciation to others and to God. Too often in our stress-filled life, we become focused on what we're doing, the stresses we face, the challenges, and we can become quite self-absorbed. And unfortunately, many times, we take it out on the ones who are closest to us, either directly by our own words or indirectly by becoming disengaged. In those times, make the effort to show appreciation for the things they do, for the fact they're in our lives. Because at times, as we know, we can become short, dismissive, hurtful. Words have a powerful effect on people who hear them. That's why companies pay so much for advertising. Say a thing long enough, and people will start believing it. We need to put a priority in showing appreciation for what others do. It's more than just saying, oh, thanks. It can be spending time with a person to see how they're doing. It can be volunteering to do something to help someone else. It can be letting the person know how much you appreciate them. We can show our appreciation to God by communicating with God, by letting God know how much we appreciate the calling we've been given, how much we appreciate the others who are with us in this journey, how much we appreciate our families and being and living in such a blessed land as this. We can thank God for giving us life by valuing the lives of others. Unfortunately, we live in a day as we see too much in this world around us. There are people these days that don't value life, that don't value others. I would like to read for you a quote that I read in the magazine. It's hard for me to read every time I read this, but I'll try. You are more than ever the air that I breathe. I'm certain that this is sweet, vulnerable little soul entrusted to us because we have such a special love. I am more than ever looking forward to our lives together. Thank you so much for the last 9 months and for little Ryan and for being the best wife and soulmate a husband could have. The reason why I get choked up at this quote is because it's a husband, a letter, to, a note to his husband, to his wife, a few days after she has given birth to a son with Down syndrome. And at the time of the writing, they knew they would need heart surgery for the young child. The family, according to the author of the article, was still striving, just as predicted in the letter. I had a younger brother who passed away recently, who was developmentally disabled. And though I wish he did not have that disability, I can honestly say that my life has been enriched, blessed, because I had the opportunity to know him. At times it wasn't easy, especially after both my parents died, and he who lived at home had to get adjusted with life without them. And it wasn't without its moments. I remember one time, I used to have the rule is, if he ever called, and I was in important meetings, I would step out. And one time he called during church. And his was always the call I'd answer. And so I ran outside because the phone was ringing and during church services, and he called me to tell me that Brett Favre just threw a touchdown for the Packers. It's a special moment, and I do miss him. He made an incredible, positive influence in my life, and for that I am most grateful, and I miss him dearly. So even in our challenging times, we can find positive things. The Bible encourages us to be thankful at all times. 1 Thessalonians 5 verse 18 says, "In everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you." This not only includes what we've been given, but we are thankful for those around us. Turn to Galatians 6 verse 7. Galatians 6 verse 7. It states in Galatians 6 verse 7, "Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. Whoever sows to please their flesh from the flesh will reap destruction. Whoever sows to please the Spirit from the Spirit will reap eternal life. Let us not become weary in doing good. For the proper time we will reap a harvest if we don't give up. Therefore, as we have the opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially those of the family of believers." The thankful person is grateful to God for the gifts, abilities, and talents and opportunities that he or she has. And they're willing to do good to all men as they have the ability to do so. The thankful person knows that everything belongs ultimately to God, and what he or she possesses came from God, and we're merely a steward for a short period of time we're on this earth to take care of those things. The blessings we are to receive and we have received are to be used for God's glory. And in sharing with others, we realize that we're not sharing our own things, but God's blessings that we have been given, and we get the opportunity to share it with others. A thankful person takes the time to express appreciation to others. We have that opportunity today with the family of Mr. John Garms to let them know how much we appreciated his smile, his quote-unquote sense of humor, his friendship, his warmth. When we walked into the door, and I'll never forget, I loved and I miss him dearly even now. When I would walk into the door, he would be the first one, one of the first ones to extend a hand and welcome us. And he always had a smile. He always had optimism. We can let them know how much Mr. Garms impacted our lives, because he's impacted mine. In this message today, we discuss the burden of ingratitude. It's not only the burden in others' lives when we think about it, it's the burden in our lives as well. With regard to finances, the lack of appreciation can cause us to not value what we have. Being unappreciative could cause us to make very unwise decisions, financial decision based upon a perceived need, which is really just a want. With regard to relationships, ingratitude can cause untold hurt to us and those around us, those who we relate to every day, especially those of our immediate families. Being unappreciative can impact the way we view life, and we can find ourselves complaining, living in a state of dissatisfaction, being negative, being pessimistic. Being unappreciative and being unthankful can not only impair our relationships with others, it can destroy our relationship with God. So much that it states in Romans 21, 1 verse 21, that our hearts can become darkened. We can change this cycle. We can change the cycle of ingratitude by meditating, forcing our minds to think positively, focusing on the blessings we have, and express appreciation to those around us and to God. The Roman philosopher Seneca once stated, "We can be thankful to a friend for a few acres or a little money, and yet for the freedom and command of the whole earth, and for the great benefits of our being, our life, health, and reason, we look upon ourselves as being under no obligation." Even if we have a few physical possessions, even if we are going through incredible challenges, we have much to be thankful for. Each other here, our families, our calling, our hope. Let's not forget to be appreciative of the many blessings we have. And one final thing, don't forget to take one day this week and try not to complain. I will try again to do this myself, but I think what you'll find, and you'll be surprised how much ingratitude has embraced our thinking.